I'm quite convinced these coins are going to $1 million and then someday $10 million, you know, very much like Sailor. You know, whether it happens in 3 years or 6 years, you know, it's the same place. You know, we have long time preference. We can wait. So we'll get there. Where's the top on the cycle? I don't know. Looking at last cycles, I mean, I would guess, I think 200 is just kind of easy. It feels to me like we will get there, no question. Obviously, at any point in time, you know, different political events could shove it much higher. I mean, I think if the big print comes along, which is, we'll talk about that later, but if the government has to capitulate and start printing money again, it'll go a lot higher than 200 on the cycle. If the government actually starts to print money to buy Bitcoin, the dollar is going to go down in terms of everything. By the way, it's going to be massively inflationary in dollar terms, in Bitcoin terms. And this is the most asymmetric situation I've seen in 40-some odd years of investing. We'll just have to see. I said yesterday, get the popcorn, right? We'll have to see what happens there. To me, it's coming, but I don't know when. And that is the hard part.
Bing bong. I am back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast with the man, the myth, the legend, recurring guest, Larry Lepard. Larry, there's been a lot of craziness going on. We're recording this a couple days into Trump's presidency. We're talking about the Bitcoin stockpile, potential of lowering interest rates. So I'll start it off the bat. Last time we talked, we weren't quite over this 100K mark. So how high do you think we're going here, Larry? Do you think this is the suddenly time?
I wish I know. I wish I knew, and I hope Samson's right. But if, you know, I think you can very conservatively. I mean, I was calling for 100. You could see, you know, I like the way it's progressing. It kind of moves up and then it builds a nice big base and flag, and then it moves up again and builds, you know, so we're at 58, and then we went to 70, and then we went to 100. And I think the next move is going to take us to 130 or something. And where's the top on the cycle? I don't know. Looking at last cycles, I mean, I would guess, I think 200 is just kind of easy. It feels to me like we will get there, no question. Does it go a lot beyond that? It could. I mean, how many standard deviations above, you know, the 200-day moving average can it go, right? I mean, and obviously at any point in time, you know, different political events could shove it much higher. I mean, I think if the big print comes along, which is, we'll talk about that later, but, if the government has to capitulate and start printing money again, it'll go a lot higher than 200 on the cycle. And that's a possibility, but, you know, there are never any certainties in this world. But I feel very good, you know, buying it right here. I think it will be higher. I also think that when we get to the next peak, there'll probably be a correction. I don't think we're going to see any more of the 80 or 90% corrections, but a 30, 40, 50% correction would certainly be, you know, something I could see. So, I mean, my model is maybe it goes to 250 and then corrects back to 150 or something. I don't know. That's just a guess.
Yeah. Hey, I'm here with you, but you talked about the big print and I've heard you talk about that a little bit. Talk about that because, you know, we did see a big print in 2020 where, you know, 60% of the money supply was printed and in 2 years time period. Right. Do you think we're going to see something as dramatic as that again?
I really do. And you know, it's also the title of a book that I'll be releasing in the next few weeks. I mean, the math is just, and you know this, Brandon, most Bitcoiners know this, the math is just such that they have to continue including, you know, creating more base money to support the incredible debt structure that they have above it in terms of, you know, the federal debt and personal debts and all the interest costs. And so if they don't have an inflationary world, the alternative is everything collapses a la 1929. And so, you know, it's stop go, right? I mean, they print a lot in 08 and then they print actually a lot all the way through 2013. Then they stop for a while. Then, you know, you have a repo, you know, blow out in 2019, they start printing again, you know, and then COVID comes, they really print. And then 22 comes along and Powell says, and we printed too much. Let's, you know, tighten up and print less. And so, but, you know, I think they're running out of tricks to hide the fact that they're behind the curve on all of this. And, you know, the reverse repo has been drawn down. You know, they've failed to term out a lot of the debt. So they've got a lot of short-term debt rolling over at high interest rates. And I'm sure you saw it. Most everyone else saw it yesterday. Trump said interest rates need to be lower. So that's setting up for a pretty interesting discussion between Trump and Powell. And Powell said he won't resign. And but Trump can make his life miserable, put a lot of pressure on him. So we'll just have to see. I said yesterday, get the popcorn, right? We'll have to see what happens there.
Yeah, I definitely think it's going to be an interesting couple of years with the last two left in Powell's term. And Trump is really going to be pushing for those low interest rates because, you know, he loves that with his asset prices skyrocketing. Exactly. But will that low interest rate environment, is that could potentially what triggers us into this debt spiral, or do you think we're already in it?
I think we're kind of already in it, and actually lower rates would somewhat help. I mean, the lower rates, the greater problem there is that it will reignite inflation. I mean, I don't think they really have inflation tamed. My most recent quarterly letter just out talks about that. There's a lot of evidence they don't. Labor is getting more than 2% a year. You know, the longshoreman just got 10% for a year for 6 years. You know, agriculture commodities last year as a basket were up 20 some odd percent, which is why, you know, your food bills are higher. And, to me, it's coming. But I don't know when, and that is the hard part. But for those of us who are in Bitcoin and who have kind of a HODL philosophy and have had it for years and years, you know, it doesn't really matter, right? I mean, if we, you know, I'm quite convinced these coins are going to $1 million and then someday 10 million bucks, you know, very much like Saylor says. And, you know, whether it happens in 3 years or 6 years, it's the same place. And, you know, we have long time preference. We can wait. So we'll get there.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think we will as well, but there's been a lot of interesting developments since in the positive direction for the Bitcoin space.
Oh yeah.
We last talked. You brought up Saylor, and I want to talk about the FASB with a lot of essentially the accounting regulations are a little bit more friendly. So companies can put Bitcoin on their balance sheet.
Right.
Now, do you see, you know, as a traditional, you know, equities gold guy, do you see that this is going to be essentially the new wave here in 25, or do you think traditional finance isn't?
Yeah, new? Well, so many of the TradFi guys are still stuck in their old models. I argue with them every day on Twitter, but you know, but slowly but surely, I mean, people are coming around. I mean, kind of the kingpin of that is, I mean, look at a guy like Larry Fink, who runs, you know, BlackRock, which is the biggest asset manager in the world. And, you know, he hated Bitcoin. We used to talk down on Bitcoin. Now he says it's digital gold. I mean, he got it. He did the work. And he came to the conclusion, oh, this is going to happen. I better either decide I'm going to be with it and be a winner or be against it and not win. And so he made the right choice. And I think that's every TradFi guy is going to face that decision, you know, as it continues to go up. And some will be dragged kicking and screaming into it. And as, you know, we all say, you get Bitcoin at the price you deserve. But you're right. There have been a ton of really great things since you and I last spoke. I mean, probably the biggest was the ETF, right? I wasn't sure that was going to happen. When that happened, that was just like, oh, my God. And, you know, it's been the biggest, fastest growing ETF category ever. I mean, the gold ETF, I remember when it came out in the 2000s, it was a big deal. It took gold from 250 to 1900 over the space of a bunch of years. But if you look at the growth in size, this ETF far exceeds the growth in the size of the gold ETF in the same time frame. Obviously, you know, the election of Trump and a more crypto and Bitcoin friendly administration is a big deal, huge deal. I mean, you know, choke point's going to go away. Elizabeth Warren, you put her back in her cage. So that's a huge deal. And then as you point out, the SAB 121 thing, I mean, that's big too. I mean, I think there was a video yesterday on Twitter about Brian Armstrong as the CEO of Bank of America talking about how, you know, banks will be offering Bitcoin products. So it's clear that the trend is there, the trend is accelerating. And that's always been the major thing that I've focused the most on. I mean, early on, I focused on technology. I was afraid, is this thing going to blow up? You know, back in 2013, 14, when I was first playing around with buying it. But now that one's gone down in my mind in terms of risks. But, you know, the one risk I've always been aware of is just, do people lose interest in this? It's like, it's kind of a fad. Let's, you know, we don't need this. But I just don't see any evidence of that. In fact, I see the opposite. You know, more and more people are slowly but surely becoming aware of it. And then, you know, I don't know how familiar you are with it, but I'm about to make my contribution to trying to make people aware with it. I've written a book. It's called The Big Print. It'll be it's on Amazon now for pre-purchase in terms of Kindle, and then the paperback and hardcover versions will be out sometime in the next 2 or 3 weeks. So, and it really what it is, just briefly, it's an attempt to simplify the area and how broken the monetary system is, and show people. With no financial background, really no financial background. You could be at any stage or walk of life and not be thinking about the money system at all. Read this book and get mad and say, oh, I get it. They've been screwing me. And then, you know, that's part one. That's broken into two parts. Part one is the problem. And it talks all about how they've been screwing us for many, many years. This goes back quite a ways. And I cover all that. And then part two is, here's this really good news. You know, there's a solution. I mean, the solution obviously is ultimately Bitcoin, but really the solution is technology. I mean, if you kind of look at what's, you know, I've watched the, you know, the arc of America since I was a kid in the 70s, and, you know, if you look at what's, I think, saved America, or the best trend in America for that time frame is the development of the microprocessor and technologies, and the way the internet is breaking down the big power structures and allowing guys like you and Rogan and others to, you know, disintermediate the big, you know, news organizations who basically were propaganda outlets. And then, of course, this is, you know, Bitcoin, it's going to do the same thing for money, right? I mean, you had to play within their system. You had to play within their rules. You had to deal with the bank. You know, they charge you 25% to borrow. They give you no interest when you make a deposit. I mean, it's just, it's a game that's set up to screw people. And finally, they, you know, there's a way to opt out. You know, as my friend Jeff Booth says, I mean, if we all adopted this, we could shut their system down, which, would, you know, in my view, would be really a good thing. So that technology is what's going to save us. So the book is optimistic, but it's pessimistic about the system we got right now. And I think it's a timely book because I think a lot of people, it'll resonate. You know, the inflation of the COVID thing, that really hurt. I mean, all of these bubbles have hurt people. I mean, the 2000 bubble hurt people, the 2008 bubble hurt people. But the COVID one really hurt people. And, you know, there are a lot of people in this country that are just having a really hard time with the cost of their lifestyle or their living, and they're working super hard just to keep their head above water. And, we're throwing what they may not realize yet, but what I hope this book will convey is that we're trying to throw them a life raft and say, hey, you know, grab onto this, you know, it'll help. So,
yeah, 100%. And I want to dive into that book here in a second, but you mentioned the ETFs at the beginning. Yeah. And that was the, you know, essentially one of the biggest catalysts to, I think we've been around for about a year. Yeah. So, you know, there's been a lot of, you know, Bitcoin Twitter is very anti ETF, at least from the maxi side of things. Yeah. But it seems like, you know, the embracement from traditional finance is there, but it's not fully there. A lot of the money is coming from a few amount of hands. Now, Correct. Do you think that traditional finance has just still not figured it out yet, even with the ETFs, and there's a lot of money still waiting to be dumped in?
Absolutely. No, it's all on a spectrum, right? I mean, there's tons of money. We'll get to the total available market in a minute. There's tons of money ready to come in. And you're correct. Most of traditional finance has not figured it out. And I know some part of Bitcoin Twitter. I mean, look, I get that an ETF is not owning Bitcoin. You don't own those keys. And, you know, if the government goes to all those ETFs and says, give us those coins, cash everybody out with dollars, you know, you're screwed. And we have a historical precedent for that because Roosevelt did it in 33. So 34, 33, he revalued gold. But the TradFi guys are just going to be dragged. Some of them are going to be dragged kicking and screaming, but their business is to get returns for their investors. I mean, that is their business. And, you know, full stop. I mean, you know, risk adjusted, Sharpe ratio, whatever you want to use, whatever metrics you want to use. And there's this chapter in this book that compares Bitcoin to all the other. I mean, Bitcoin is just crushing every other alternative investment. So if you're in the investment management business and you're not aware of Bitcoin, considering Bitcoin, saying, hey, maybe you should have a little allocation to it. I mean, look, I understand why people are concerned and afraid about it. In fact, there's a chapter in the book called Skepticism that talks about all the FUD that people have thrown up, and I've tried to swat those things away. TradFi, they're going to be forced. I mean, when you were performing so much better just by having a little bit of Bitcoin in your portfolio than the person who just owns the S&P and doesn't have the Bitcoin, you know, that's their job. Their job is to get a good performance for their clients. You know? And so, I mean, you know, at some point they're going to slowly but surely all be forced to wake up and recognize that they're not doing their job if they don't allocate something into this asset. Again, the book is trying to push that, you know, that narrative and help them to understand it. And I try and do it, you know, in a reasonably kind way. The only part of the book that's kind of unkind is I'm pretty harsh on the central bankers. Because they've, you know, in my view, they really are at the scene of the crime, and they're the arrogance of the central bankers is part of how we got into this mess, a large part of how we got into this mess.
I believe you on that one, but you brought up the total addressable market.
Let's talk about that. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, has TradFi embraced this? Hell no. I mean, let me give you an example, right? So as you know, and I think you know where I'm going here, Jesse Meyer has the all time best chart on this topic. And, he's a great analyst with OnRamp Bitcoin out in California. And, you know, $2 trillion of Bitcoin, okay, today's market value, and $900 trillion of, you know, kind of what we consider investment assets. Half of that's roughly real estate. So some people view that as investment assets, some people view it as a home. But whatever, even if it's only 450 trillion, the numbers are still compelling. But, you know, the, all those other assets are, you know, it's cash, bonds, stock, artwork, you know, all the other things that people invest their money into. And, of course, the, probably the biggest one is the bond market. The second biggest one is the stock market. Cash is another good substitute. And, you know, $2 trillion on 900, that means 0.2% of the world's assets are in Bitcoin right now. 0.2%, okay? So Bitcoin could go up 10x. Bitcoin could go from 0.2% to 2% of the world's assets. And it would still, you know, it would still represent a small fraction. I mean, you know, the amount of gold in the world, there's $18 trillion worth of gold in the world. So Bitcoin's got to go up 9x to, you know, to beat gold. And, you know, it's just, it's, to me, it's just obvious that it's going to happen unless something in the trends that I'm looking at changes. And that's always possible. I mean, you never say never in the investment business because, you know, you can believe something and be totally wrong. But, you know, it doesn't, I mean, I don't see anything to indicate that that's likely to happen. So, gosh, it, you know, and I think 2% is just a starting point. I mean, if this really is a sounder form of money than anything else out there, it will become, you know, the go-to long-term saving asset that just kind of compounds over time. And another part of the book that is interesting, I think your listeners might find interesting, is that I think investing changed when the internet got invented and networking businesses got invented. And I say that because I was trained and brought up in traditional investing, value investing, growth at a reasonable price investing, all the stuff that business schools teach you that the TradFi guys know. And along comes the internet and you get these powerful network businesses. And, you know, Amazon since IPO is up like 218,000%. Okay. Google is up like 9,000%. Facebook is up like 3,000%. Apple, you know, I mean, these businesses that have a network component to them have shown just incredible growth. I mean, General Motors never went up 218,000%. I mean, you know, between 1915 and 1960. I mean, it went up a lot, but it didn't go up that much. And so there's something going on here in the network investing. And by the way, I missed this. I mean, I kicked myself because I looked at Google, I looked at Facebook, I looked at Amazon, and I thought at every stage, I thought, God, they're good businesses. They're growing. I get it. Amazon's case, they weren't even making any money in the early days, but how can I pay this much for them? The valuations were really high relative to cash flow and earnings. I thought they're just too expensive. I can't buy them. And so I didn't. and I have enormous regret that I didn't do that because they're up so much. And so, you know, I'm not going to make that mistake again. I mean, those are all, you know, product businesses or service businesses. But, you know, this is actually bigger because it's for money and money is involved in every business. And it's the exact same model. I mean, it's as you know, Metcalfe's law says that the value of a network grows at the square of the growth of the number of users. And so, you know, as we get more and more people using Bitcoin or using any network, the networks gets bigger and more powerful in a geometric kind of fashion. So that's why, you know, when we sit here and we look at, and you know, you hear sailors say $13 million Bitcoin, or I'm saying $10 million Bitcoin, and people just look at me like I'm nuts, like you're out of your mind. That's never going to happen. And I'm absolutely sure it's going to happen. You know, I'm completely convinced of it. And but people think I'm crazy. And it's just because of the model that I'm using and I'm comparing it to these other network businesses and what they did in terms of value growth, right?
So. Yeah. So you're talking about, you know, some of the best performing assets of all time, right? Amazon and everything like that. Do you think that Bitcoin is going to be potentially the most monumental asset or growth?
Quick break from this podcast episode to bring you the safest way to buy Bitcoin on the planet. You got to go to the well, folks. That's right, the Bitcoin well. They will help you buy Bitcoin and send it directly to your personal wallet. You can sell Bitcoin directly from your personal Bitcoin wallet. And on top of that, if you want to buy large amounts of Bitcoin, they've got some of the most competitive rates in the space where they've got great white glove service. I'll even help introduce you to my friends over at the Bitcoin Well to make sure that they're taking care of you when you want to go through the over-the-counter service. And on top of that, they help support you and the freedom technology that Bitcoin offers. So I wouldn't partner with a company that I don't use myself. So I use Bitcoin Well to make all of my Bitcoin purchases purchases, so I highly recommend them. So why don't you go to thebitcoinwell.com/greencandle and you could sign up today and join the party at the well, maybe even get some tokens where you could throw into the wishing well and potentially win some free sats as well. Enough from me, let's get back to the show.
I actually do. I mean, I don't know if it'll outperform Amazon. I mean, I don't know exactly what it's going to do, but it's going to have a similar arc to those because, you know, if it really does become the base layer of money, and I really believe it will be, I believe that our kids and my grandkids will transact in Satoshis. That, you know, you'll say, how much is that stake? And they'll say, it's, you know, that's 7 Satoshis or whatever the number is. That, you know, it's just going to be so far away. And you know, one of the biggest things, I'm sure you encounter this too, that I encounter in talking to people about is they just, you know, oh, it's 100,000. I've missed it. You know, I know you bought it a lot cheaper. Gosh, good for you, but that's not so good for me. And I'm kind of like, well, you know, if I told you, you know, I had a story about this in the book. In Microsoft, I bought it. It went up 3 or 4x and I needed some money. So I sold it. But it continued to go up another 1,000x. Do you know what I mean? And so, you know, I mean, if in 5 years, Bitcoin's $1 million, I think that's very doable. And in 15 years, Bitcoin's $10 million. I think that's very doable. Are you going to care that you paid 90 or 110 for it? I mean, I don't think so. And that's the way you got to look at it. I mean, I get a kick out of, you know, talk to Max Kaiser and he says, yeah, you know, I felt like I was overpaying because Trace was getting it at 25 cents and I had to pay a dollar. Do you know what I mean? I mean, everybody feels like they're overpaying. And that's just the nature. You got to understand what it is. There's a fixed supply of it. So it's always going to feel expensive. You know, because, you know, as he says, it's going up forever, Laura. And so you just buy it and sit back. And I mean, the toughest part, and I talk about this in the book too, is, you know, to people who don't really fundamentally understand what it is. And I had some people I put into it, you know, at kind of at the tops before the SBF episode at 50 or 60, and they were buying it. And it went down to 15 because of SBF and, you know, rate hikes and all the other stuff. And they said, oh, shit, I made a mistake. And they blew it out. Right. They sold it. And that's the toughest part. I think it's incumbent upon all of us Bitcoiners to help the people that we're bringing along with us to understand that you've got to view this as if it goes down 50%, I don't care because I have a 5, 10, 15, 20 year window here. And I know, you know, everyone who's held it for 4 years is in the black. And I think that pattern will continue.
Now, I think that you know, there's going to be a lot of different catalysts kind of coming along in there, you know, although the total addressable market, we're only at 2%. Now with nation states,
0.2%. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you were saying the exponential growth to 2%, excuse me. Yeah, with nation states and the potential of now businesses, we've had, you know, Microsoft, although they voted no, we've had Amazon and Meta now potentially talk about putting Bitcoin on the balance sheet. Now, it seems like this could be part of the exponential growth curve where the adoption is going to just absolutely take off.
Completely agree.
What do you think the next step is?
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, so, you know, I've used the power law that, you know, Kruger and Anastasia have developed on Bitcoin Twitter as a good kind of base model. But I think like all models, that'll eventually break and will break to the upside. And I don't really know what the catalyst is. You probably know it as well as I do. But I think, you know, what will probably happen is, yeah, some more nation states will announce that they're stacking it. The U.S. just, you know, as you saw, Trump just signed an executive order talking about creating a digital reserve. I wish he'd called it a Bitcoin reserve, but he had to give a nod to all the other coins that have supported him in his election. You know, I think, you know, it will get onto bank balance sheets. I mean, it's just, you know, I think once you start to realize what it is, you know, you kind of FOMO into it because you just don't want to miss it. I mean, I remember listening to Saylor talking about how when he first found it, he was like, oh my God, you know, I got to buy as much of this thing as I can before it gets away from me. And of course he still keeps buying it even though it's higher. And I think, you know, when people have that quote unquote aha moment and more of them have it, you know, I Samson's not wrong. I mean, we will be $1 million a coin, you know, and that's why, you know, that's why I'm not going to sell any. And that's why, you know, don't cap your upside. You just don't know what's going to happen. you know, so it, but you've got to always be mentally prepared for the drawdown. You know, I mean, you can, I mean, we could be at 200 in a year, which seems very likely to me. At the end of this year, we'd be at 200. And we could all be feeling great and think we're geniuses and, you know, look at the numbers and say, gosh, I'm a lot richer than I used to be. And something could happen and we could have a 50% drawdown easily. And, you know, that would be a great buying opportunity in my view. But, you know, you'd have to have some cash to buy it with coming from some other source. But, you know, I certainly wouldn't sell it there. I mean, I view this as something I'm going to hold for decades. And, you know, perhaps someday when I retire and I need, you know, it doesn't produce a yield. And I don't really believe in most of the yield producing products. And I'm not sure I really even want to borrow against it. You know, I imagine what I would do is just say, okay, I'll sell 1% of what I hold or whatever I need to cover my annual expenses. And, you know, at the age I'm at, it's unlikely I'd run out of money before, you know, time catches up with me. So, it is what it is. It's an unbelievable opportunity. I mean, the book talks about this too. There's, you know, all the money and the great wealth in this world has been built in asymmetric situations that don't have a capped upside. All you can lose is what you put in. And this is the most asymmetric situation I've seen in 40 some odd years of investing. I mean, I saw some other ones, I blew it, you know. I mean, Google was one and, you know, Amazon was one and so forth, but, this is just as good in my opinion, perhaps better. And, that asymmetry, it just creates wealth like nothing else.
The only response I have to that is bullish, Larry. I mean,
yeah, right. I mean, well,
could you not be at this point?
I'm extremely bullish, but it is what it is. I mean, our job, you know, I think is to try and help and save as many people as possible because, you know, in 10 years or 20 years, I think, you know, it's going to be noticeable whose families, you know, what people own Bitcoin and which people didn't. I mean, even just having a single coin is going to be a life-changing event for people. I mean, it's fun. I've been doing this for a long time now, doing pods, making a lot of noise. And, you know, I'm a loudmouth on Twitter and all that shit. And it's fun because I get these DMs from guys, you know, people, I have no idea who they are, but they're like, geez, man, I listened to you 3 or 4 years ago and I bought some of this and it's not a big number, but boy, it's had a huge impact on my family. Cause I mean, a lot of these people were buying at 20,000. Well, you know, they haven't seen investments go up 5X, you know, in their lifetime. I mean, I had a guy who was a truck driver stop me in a Whole Foods and, you know, came over and said, are you Larry? I said, yeah. And he said, oh, thanks, man. I really appreciate it. I've been listening to your pods for years and I've been stacking like crazy and this shit's really working. I was like, I mean, it made my day, right? I mean, this guy's not a wealthy guy, but you know, he understands sound money and he decided to, you know, to buy sound money. And so, and I, you know, I, that's the thing. I mean, I would just encourage everyone who's skeptical, everybody who doesn't like it, you know, you got to take the time to really understand what it is. It's an invention. And it's like, it'd be like saying, you know, well, I don't believe in airplane flight, you know, well, the planes are flying, you know. Yeah, and in the early days it was dangerous for sure. A lot of people got killed in airplanes in the 20s and 30s, but ultimately they ironed out the problems, and you know, now you fly all around the world pretty safely and inexpensively, relatively. So, and that's kind of the same thing here. I mean, we got problems to iron out. I mean, I'm kind of frustrated and underwhelmed by how well the Lightning stuff has developed. I mean, for small stuff, it works great. I try to send a multi-$1,000 transaction. It's kind of slow and somewhat unreliable for bigger transactions. So, you know, the layer two development has to improve. It will, I'm sure. In that respect, it reminds me of the internet. I mean, early days, the internet was really clunky. I mean, it was dial up, it was green screen. We didn't have Windows. I mean, it was, there was almost like, why am I even on this thing? But you could see that you could see that they would fix the things that were wrong with it. And I think that's what you've got here too. I think these things will get fixed.
You know? Yeah, definitely. Like, you know, you couldn't have a phone call while you were doing the dial-up internet at the same
time. Right, exactly.
You were putting it up, like little things like that. You know, you brought up Sailor, and yeah. I have a theory. I asked Jeff this question too, so yeah. I want to ask you. So I have this crazy theory that I think Mark Zuckerberg could be a bigger Bitcoin bull than Sailor. Now, before you start answering that question, let me explain why.
Okay, tell me.
Because Meta right now obviously has a larger market cap than MicroStrategy, and the only CEO that has more voting power than Michael Saylor or similar to Michael Saylor when he first implemented the Bitcoin strategy, that has a bigger company and market cap, is Mark Zuckerberg. Yeah. So we all know he's got his goats, Maxi and Bitcoin. So am I just too crazy, or do you think that if Mark Zuckerberg were to start buying Bitcoin, it would just be something that would just take this thing off?
That would be a huge deal, because there are a lot of people believe in him, use Facebook, follow him, etc. I mean, that would be a very big deal. And I just don't know. I haven't followed him closely enough. I haven't followed all what he said. I noticed, that was interesting the way he's pivoted, kind of his view on censorship since Trump got elected. Some of these guys, count me as a skeptic on a lot of these people, and so I'm skeptical of him and his motives, but who knows? I do know that I think over time, more and more people will come to adopt it. I mean, I think as an example, I take Apple. I think Tim Cook understands what it is. I think he owns it personally. I'm guessing he might even be considering it, adding it to the Apple balance sheet. That would be a pretty big deal if that happened. Microsoft, the shareholders were able to get a discussion about it. Saylor gave them the pitch. Of course, they didn't get the votes. But, the fact that even those things are occurring, it's just a really big deal, right? I mean, these conversations are being had. And, a lot of times the answer is no. But, 5 years ago, the conversation wasn't even being had. I mean, before the ETF, the biggest concern I got continually from my friends and TradFi people is, that's a great dream. And that's, I get it, but the government's going to shut this thing down. You guys are all dreaming. There's just no way they're going to let this thing continue. And then they called it a commodity and approved the ETF. And it was kind of like, maybe they're not. Now, that doesn't mean they won't in the future, which is why having your own keys and not being an ETF is very important, in my opinion. But the point is that, right now, and particularly with this administration, the regulatory environment is full steam ahead, and thankfully, because of Jason Lowry's thesis, and some people have said, well, if you're advocating having the government buy Bitcoin, you're being a statist, and don't get me wrong, there's nobody who hates big government more than me. There's nobody who hates the state more than me. On the other hand, if I had to pick between, the U.S. state, the Russian state and the Chinese state, I do like ours a little more than theirs. Not a lot more, but a little bit more. And, they've made a big bet on gold. And, I think that's wrong. I think they'll be like, India was to back in the day when they were betting on silver and everyone else was betting on gold, and gold demonetized silver. And so in this particular case, I think it'd be good if the U.S. bet on Bitcoin, not on gold. Because what's going on, we're going to have to do, in my most recent quarterly letter, I talked about this, we're in a sovereign debt crisis, right? And the numbers are such that it's compounding so quickly that without radical moves, it's not going to stop. It's going to get worse. I mean, this is Lynn's, train not stopping. And so as a result of that, we've got to go to a neutral reserve currency. And the only two choices are gold and Bitcoin. And the rest of the world's bet on gold. And the way to leapfrog them is for the U.S. to bet on Bitcoin. And my guess is that Bessent might actually understand that. He was a big gold guy. He understands sound money. He said, the Bretton Woods, we might need another Bretton Woods-like monetary conference. And he said that if such a thing happens, he wants to be at the table. So, there's a lot of interesting stuff going on right now, Brandon. Hang on, because I think the next 2 years are going to be just a really, really interesting time in this area. I mean, we're going to have a lot of stuff's going to happen, in my opinion.
Okay, so you've discovered Bitcoin and are on the path to financial self-sovereignty. But simply holding Bitcoin is not enough. You need to make sure that it's scored properly and you are in 100% control over all your assets. So sharing your keys with third parties and taking on that counterparty risk is not the answer. The answer is pure and simple. It's uncompromising self-custody, and there's no better way to do it than the Bitcoin way. They've got over 25 years of cybersecurity experience, and their team of experts can help you properly self-custody your Bitcoin, secure your digital life, configure your privacy phones, and even establish a Plan B residency if you're looking to do so. So I'm gonna help you guys out here and give you a free consultation if you take the first step and visit thebitcoinway.com/greencandle, and you can check out the boys at The Bitcoin Way.
and see how they can help you become self-sovereign.
Yeah, it seems like we're definitely loading up the fuel in the rocket ship.
Yeah, right?
I just get jacked up just thinking about it. But you brought up that the rest of the world is betting on gold and that the U.S. could, you know, stay in front by just betting on Bitcoin. Now, how confident are you in the current administration now, their ability to do that? Or do you, are you a little worried after we're seeing the Trump coin, the Melania coin, all these kind of things?
Yeah, boy. You know, you got to take the good with the bad, right? I mean, there's so many things about this administration that are good for Bitcoin and good for, you know, our side. But when he came out with Trump and Melania coins, I was like, oh, man, this guy just can't help himself. He's just such, he wants to brand, you know, his name on everything. And that was, I was very disappointed, but it is what it is. And, you know, they won't work and they'll fade away. And Melania coins already down like 60%. And, you know, it's just, you know, guys like that are going to do what they're going to do, which is why I kind of dislike all politicians, really, on both sides. But, I'm pretty confident that there are people in the government, in the Pentagon and others that understand that Bitcoin's the real deal. There are a lot of people that think that, you know, Saylor is in some way connected with all that. It's possible. I mean, he's in that whole DC tech community. I know from people who've had private conversations with Jason Lowry that, you know, he said that the people, the military gets it. The military, the CIA, the power structure actually gets it. They get that this is a future reserve asset and that the U.S. holding on to it is an important thing. He also says that, you know, Congress, the judiciary, the executive branch, I mean, you know, the rest of the Biden administration didn't get it. The Treasury, the Fed, they all hate it because it threatens their power structure, which makes perfect sense, right? And of course, that's what Trump is all about, is disrupting that old swampy power structure as much as he can. So we'll see. I mean, you know, it's I have hope that they will do the right thing. But, you know, I'm pretty used to being disappointed by politicians. And I'm sure, you know, like Trump coin. I mean, I was massively disappointed when he did that. Like, what the hell are you doing, dude? This makes no sense. I mean, this is, you know, and some poor people are going to buy that thing and they're going to lose money. And it's just like, is that really what you want to, you know, have your name associated with? I wouldn't think so. So.
Yeah. So, you know, with that, you said that, you know, the way that U.S. could adopt Bitcoin. Now, I want to dive into that a little bit because what do you necessarily mean that by that? Do you mean the strategic reserve? Do you mean backing the dollar with Bitcoin? What do you think is like the pinnacle?
Yeah, well, it gets really tricky, messy, and hard to predict. But, you know, what we're ultimately talking here is about the dollar kind of going away and about Bitcoin kind of replacing the dollar. And, you know, there are a lot of ways that can happen. It can happen organically and slowly. It can happen in a rush and messy if everybody runs to the exit from the dollar. It could happen with a monetary reset. You know, I think, you know, partly depending upon how aggressively the government goes at buying Bitcoin, that will set the tone for what the dollar value is. I mean, if the government actually starts to print money to buy Bitcoin, the dollar is going to go down in terms of everything. And by the way, it's going to be massively inflationary in dollar terms. In Bitcoin terms, inflation won't be that bad. In fact, it'll continue to be deflationary. But, you know, they could at some point say, yeah, we're, you know, the government stands ready to buy and sell Bitcoin at this price. The problem is nobody knows what, quote unquote, this price is. And, you know, so they've kind of got to let the market discover it. But, you know, all I can say as an investment manager is that I'm very comfortable being in the asset that they can't print. And how we get from here to that asset being the underlying numeraire or base layer of money in the world, I don't know. I'm not smart enough that nobody knows. I mean, there's just too many moving pieces, right? But, and for, you know, for all I know, I mean, I've talked to Jeff about this as well. I mean, I think there's some possibility that the world and even the U.S. government will try to do a gold reset first, you know, and I mean, they should do it on Bitcoin, but they'll try for gold first because it's historically been around and all that. And it would, you know, I could see that. And, you know, if they have the 261 million ounces that they claim to have, which I don't think they have, but if they had that, you know, if they were reset gold at, you know, $75,000 an ounce and say the government stands ready to buy and sell gold at $75,000 an ounce, you know, and we're not going to print any more money. We're going to shut down the Federal Reserve. I mean, one of the things I did in the book, because a lot of people say, hey, you criticize the system, you know, propose an alternative. There is an alternative in the book. There's a chapter called Policy Response. And I actually wrote out, you know, a hypothetical speech that a president could give. I'm not going to spoil it. I want you to buy the book, but you know, that talks about what they might want to do to try and solve this. Because I honestly believe that trying to do a monetary reset like Roosevelt did could be fairer and less messy to all parties involved than kind of letting the thing naturally just kind of unwind, which I think, you know, might lead to really high inflation, arguably even hyperinflation. I hate to say that word, but it could, because, you know, if we got, I mean, you know, blue team, red team keep fighting. So right now, red team's in charge. I don't think they're going to hyperinflate because they're going to try and be somewhat, you know, restrained on spending. They'll make a good effort with Doge. I mean, they can't do what they say they're going to do. They say they're going to cut $2 trillion. They can't do that. But they're going to make a good effort. And, you know, but what was I going to say? I lost my train of thought. They are going to, in my view, if blue team comes back in. So, but let's say this is a tough 4 years. And at the end of the 4 years, the voters, you know, are all, I mean, because the voters are, I mean, I think what the voters are doing now and what I've noticed they're doing is they just throw the bums out. I mean, nobody gets reelected. Everybody is very unhappy with the condition of the country. And so at every election, it just goes, you know, to the other side. And so if in 4 years, Trump hasn't made some meaningful progress on a lot of this stuff, he's going to get thrown out and the next administration is going to be blue. And that's going to have, you know, Andrew Yang with universal basic income. It's going to have Stephanie Kelton as the Treasury Secretary. She's the monetary, you know, modern monetary theory guru. And they're going to print so much money, your eyes are going to bleed. And that could take you right to hyperinflation. So, you know, you just don't really know. You know, it's very hard to see every chess move a few years out. But I do know that the math is bearing down on them. And as a result of the math, they really don't have a choice but whether to inflate. I mean, they could also reset. But between those two things, or they could stop inflating. But if they do that, we're going to see 1929. This whole debt structure is going to come down. It's going to be, you know, just an incredible mess. It's going to make 2008 look calm. And as we all know, those of us who are in the financial markets in 2008, I mean, that was like the scariest financial event in my lifetime. I mean, everybody thought literally that the ATMs would stop working and the whole world was going to fail. I mean, I didn't believe that, but that's what they convinced Congress and got them to pass TARP as a result of that. So.
Yeah, you said a lot of interesting things there, but you said one thing that I want to dive into a little bit more on the ability to print money to buy Bitcoin. We're theoretically the only country that could do that, right? Because we're the global reserve currency. Yeah. Now, obviously, there's a few different forms of QE here. Trump's talked about the digital asset stockpile, where like hopefully that will be just a Bitcoin only stockpile, but we aren't quite sure on that just now. But it sounds like he's already kind of hinting towards lowering interest rates and buying Bitcoin. So do you see this as a potential here in this next year?
I think it's a possibility. I mean, I think he's got some things in the back of his head that could take us that way. I mean, I just don't know. I mean, my gut is that they will. Well, I, based on what I've heard, I think they're going to stop selling. I don't know if Biden sold any of the 200,000 roughly that they have, but if they didn't sell any, I think they're going to hang on to what they have. So that's a good start. And then I suspect they will start buying. I don't know if the Loomis bill will pass. I've heard both sides of that, whether, you know, I've heard they've got the votes. I've heard there's no way they don't have the votes. That would be huge if it passed. I hope it does. My gut is they can buy out of the exchange stabilization fund, and they probably will, just as a signaling mechanism. I mean, I think they want higher gold prices and higher Bitcoin prices because they want to devalue the dollar. I mean, what you've heard Vance and Trump and Bessette say is that the strong dollar is what hollowed out our manufacturing base and has really hurt America. And we need to have a weaker dollar. And so, okay, fine. How do you get a weaker dollar? Well, you market lower against hard money stuff like gold and Bitcoin. The thing that they don't talk about that those of us in the financial world know is that they have a weaker dollar, that's going to be inflationary. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, okay, so the dollar doesn't buy as much. Well, guess what? Shit's going to cost more. So, and that is the fundamental problem. I mean, when you've got your debt growing faster than GDP, you know, the way to get out of that is through financial repression, which is to have inflation. I mean, we had the same thing right after World War II, and they had, you know, yield curve control. And so they were able to grow their way out of that hole by holding rates down. And of course, all the bondholders got completely screwed in that scenario. And I think that's what will happen in this scenario as well. So yeah, I think it's entirely possible that they will be buying Bitcoin. And I mean, if they go at it really hard, I mean, it's very clear to me that they will want a lower dollar. Mathematically, they have to have a lower dollar, or else we're headed for, you know, a meltdown, a complete meltdown. And you know, the problem with the lower dollar is that'll be inflationary, and if it gets too low, then you get into a crack up boom and hyperinflation. So, you know, they're trying to walk a very thin line between those two extremes. And I mean, one of the things I did say in another podcast, I should repeat it here, is I mean, I think it's, you know, Trump is aware, and they're smart enough to know that they've only got 4 years, and really kind of only 2 years. They might, you know, lose the Senate. So if they're going to break some glass, they got to do it quick and hope that the glass gets repaired before the voters get another shot at them, right? And this reminds me of 1980 when Reagan was elected, and Volcker had rates really high, and Reagan took a lot of steps that weren't particularly popular. In the first couple of years, everyone's like, Jesus, this economy really sucks. But then kind of in 83 and 84, things got going, and Reagan won overwhelmingly, you know, as a result of that. And so, you know, if Trump's going to face, I mean, if he wants J.D. Vance to have a chance at winning in 4 years, they've got to break whatever's wrong now, take the pain now, solve it, and hopefully it'll be better in 4 years rather than the other way around. Because if something breaks now, he can still say, hey, this is Biden. You know, you can't blame me. I've been here 2 months. Oops, Brandon, I can't hear you. Are you muted? Yeah.
No, I'm good. Good, Larry. I'm still locked in listening. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. So there's a very interesting game theory, which again is why, you know, it's just like, get your popcorn. This year is going to be lights out interesting. There's a lot going on here, you know?
Yeah, I definitely think that there's a ton going on, and it's going to be absolutely insane. But you brought up the Lummis bill, and I want to dive into that a little bit as well, because it seems like everybody could then front run the U.S. where, you know, we have like essentially scheduled buying where, you know, the bill lines out 200,000 Bitcoin over 5 years, and I believe holding it for 20. So if everybody sees, hey, I'm taking a quick break from this podcast to tell you guys about Unbank. Unbank is a Bitcoin exchange with a network of ATMs all over the United States in trusted places like Costco. So you could buy and sell Bitcoin while you're getting a double chunk chocolate cookie. So on top of that, there's zero fees when you sell. That's right. I didn't stutter, folks. Zero fees. So you can visit over 28,000 locations all scattered across the U.S. They've been a trusted partner since 2014. And to start off this year hot, I've partnered with them to bring you a chance to win $200. That's right. Two cold smackers, two Ben Franks, two pieces of cheddar. All you have to do is download the app at unbank.com/greencandle, and you'll be entered in a chance to win in the raffle that'll take place on February 28th. So enter now, enter quickly, enter often, and I'll see you guys all on February 28th for the chance for you to win $200. All right, enough for me, back to the show. Hey, we're going to try to
Isn't it larger than that, Brandon? I could be wrong. I thought it was $200,000 a year for 5 years, but for a total of $1 million, right?
Yep.
Yeah,
so for a total of $1 million. So it would be like scheduled buying, basically. Yeah. And everybody would know, hey, the U.S. is trying to get 5% of the total supply here. So, you know, wouldn't it make sense that, you know, everybody would just be like, it would just go gangbusters at that
point. That's how you get to Samson's numbers. That's how you get to hyper-Bitcoinization. And that's how the power law model just totally breaks to the upside. I mean, yes. I mean, if that gets passed and that really is the plan, boy, things are going to accelerate like you would not believe. Because, yeah, if you're Russia or you're Saudi Arabia, I mean, by the way, I've heard the Saudis are buying. I've heard Oman is buying. We know the UAE has bought. I was told that, you know, from sources at MENA when I was there that, you know, they have 300,000 or 400,000 coins. You know, yeah, it becomes, I mean, you got nation state FOMO, and these people have a lot of money, right? And sovereign wealth funds. I mean, it's like, whoa, it just. And you know, the thing, a metaphor I used in my book was, I mean, this is kind of like a fire in a theater, right? I mean, if the thing that's burning is fiat, and, you know, the theater has exits, and the exit is Bitcoin, or, you know, it's kind of a smaller exit is gold. And, you know, a few people smell smoke. That's all of us. We already know the theater's on fire. We've already exited. We're out of there. We're like, this is a mess. But you know, once it becomes really obvious that there is a fire, look out, because you know it becomes a race to who can get out of there first, because the people who don't get out of there are going to get burnt up. And it could get really, really nutty. I'm not predicting that would happen. I hope, you know, I almost hope it doesn't happen, because that's going to be very chaotic for so many people. I'd much rather see a planned reset, but you know, that's not outside of the realm of possibility. And again, in the book, I've said the reason why it's so important to hold sound money right now is that that kind of a scenario is in the cards, possibly, you know, very much like it happened in Germany from 21 to 23. And, you know, we're playing for all the marbles. I mean, you know, you know, there's not going to be a do-over, you know, if and when that happens. It's not like, oh, I missed it. I'm sorry. Can I go back and buy some more of that shit cheap? No. You know, I mean, it's just like I can't buy at a dollar like Max did. You know, I mean, when Bitcoin's at 10 million, you're not going to be able to buy it at 100,000 anymore. You either own or you don't. And so, you know, that's something that I think, again, that's what leads all Bitcoiners, hardcore maxi Bitcoiners, to understand what we've got and be so convicted about this. And I think that's the piece that a newcomer has to fully understand, that, you know, hey, you know, even if you don't believe in it, I might be wrong, but hey, you know what, you know, I can afford 1% of my net worth in this. I can afford 10% of my net worth in this. You know, if it goes to zero, so be it. But if it might go up 1,000x and I don't have 1% and I'm aware of it, boy, that's, you know, that's likely to lead to big regret. And I've found in my business career, my investment career, you know, I've done things and they haven't worked, and so be it. I mean, I look back on the bet, I think, you know, I probably would have made it again. It just, you know, I just got the cards came up the wrong way. It didn't work. But, you know, if you see something that's got that potential and you don't do it, you know, you're going to experience regret. You know, now if you don't know about it, that's a different matter. You know, you don't have, but if you know about it and you don't take the time to study it, and you don't do it, it's kind of like, huh? What, you know, what's going on here? Are you really investing or not?
Yeah, no, definitely. And now you mentioned something interesting about, you know, the nation states kind of buying under the radar and people not going public with it. Do you think that's a possibility for the United States to do that? Or do you think that, you know, it's just too political?
It's possible. It's possible. I just don't know. I don't know how it all works. I know the Exchange Stabilization Fund does a lot of funny stuff. I think that that's controlled by the Fed and the Treasury. And the Fed and the Treasury have not been, you know, very favorable to the sound money cause. So my gut is that we haven't done it. My guess is Russia is actually stacking. I mean, the Saudi Arabia, Oman, and UAE data that I got came from MENA, from some people who were meeting with Trump officials, from a guy who ran the Bitcoin Policy Institute, et cetera. And the word was that, you know, these countries were literally asking the Trump administration, we're doing this. You know, one, are you okay with it? Two, are you okay with us announcing it? And the response was along the lines of, we're definitely okay with it. We're going to be doing it too. We would just ask that you hold back your announcements until we announce what we've done. So, I mean, that's going to really shift the ground. If the U.S. announces, if the Lummis bill passes and the U.S. announces that owning Bitcoin is a strategic thing for this country, oh my goodness. So because China is going to be forced to face what they want to do. And I actually don't think they fully get it. And I don't think they're stacking. And I say that just because of the way they behave towards the miners and other stuff. I could be wrong about that. They're pretty smart people. So maybe they are. But it's just going to continue. And this model will break. I mean, we will see some really crazy numbers. And the temptation, I think there'll be a lot of people who just think, oh my God, this is fabulous. And they'll sell. But if fiat really is going to zero, you know, okay, you're going to sell and you're going to get fiat. Well, then what are you going to do with the fiat? Do you know what I mean? And, that's not going to solve your problem. You know, you're still in the theater, you know, and the flames are getting higher. So, I mean, you know, when you sell an asset, you know, the thing you got to consider is, okay, what am I getting for my sale? And then what am I going to do with the proceeds of that sale? And, you know, can I put them someplace else that's better? I don't know. Maybe at some point in time, the stock market will crash and, you know, you'll be able to buy really good companies cheap. I mean, I read Jim Grant's book on the 1920s. I mean, I realized when GM first went public in the teens, you know, you could buy it like 4x earnings. It was growing like 30% a year and it paid like a 6% dividend. I mean, those were the days, right? I mean, mm-hmm. You know, compared to what you got to pay to be a participant in NVIDIA and the AI craze. I mean, the multiples are just nuts. So.
Yeah, so it seems like this recipe is, you know, built up for something to blow off the top, especially with the Lummis bill. But how influential do you think that she's been, just because she's been speaking at the Bitcoin conference for years, been really banging the drum, and it seems like all her hard work is really starting to pay off?
Totally agree. I mean, I think and credit should go here really to Caitlin Long, who whose company we've invested in with my fund. I mean, Caitlin really orange pilled all of Wyoming, including Senator Lummis. And so, you know, I don't think we'd be where we are. And I don't think we'd have the senator doing what she's doing if Caitlin hadn't done everything she'd done. But yeah, she's a fabulous advocate for Bitcoin and for freedom and for, you know, for the libertarian views that so many of us hold. And so, she'll go down in history as having seen it and seen it early. And there are others as well. I mean, so it's great. I mean, it's, you know, I'm rooting for her, and I hope that bill passes. I've talked to some people who think it will. I tend to be skeptical. I handicap it as I don't think they'll be able to get it through, but you know, I could be wrong.
All right. Well, you've mentioned it a few times about your book, so I want to dive in. I want to dive into that now, I'm excited to read it, as I'm sure everybody in the audience is. I'm sure we've been all like clamming for you to do this for a while. So, you know, tell us a little bit about it and why you decided to do it now, because you say it's a timely book. So
yeah,
it seems like it's
I wrote it in 6 months, and it'll, you know, it's got all the numbers, current numbers in it. That's why I got to get it out quickly, because all the numbers will be outdated. And when I started writing it, Bitcoin was at, you know, 58. But I'll tell you what inspired it. I was watching in March of last year, March, April of last year, I was watching some blue red debate on TV about the politics, and it was just so inane, so crazy, so stupid on both sides. And I thought to myself, God, this is just horrible. I mean, my country is being run by a bunch of idiots who have no idea what the fundamental issue is. And the fundamental issue is the money's broken, as Lynn said. You know, until we drain that swamp, you know, all these other, and when we do drain that swamp, a lot of these other issues will go away. But these are issues that are so obvious, and they weren't present. You know, I think one of the things I bring with this book is the perspective of somebody who's been at this a long time. I mean, I remember what the country was like in the 70s. It was a better country. There was a bigger middle class. There's more equality. And there are plenty of things wrong. Don't get me, you know, wrong. Terrible assassinations, a lot of race, you know, tension, et cetera. But in many ways, other than the technology we have today, in many ways, socially, I think the country was a better country in my youth. And I just thought, somebody's got to write this book. And then I looked out there, I said, well, you know, some really great books have been written. I mean, Safety's book is probably the most important economics book that's been written in 100 years. It'll go down in history as one of the best Austrian economics books ever. And then Lynn wrote a fabulous book, you know, about how the monetary system is broken and the history of it all. And I've given those to people, what I've gotten back, and I've given them to people who have no monetary background, what I've gotten back is they bog down. They start reading them, and they're like, you know, they kind of feel textbooky. And I get that. And so I thought, well, if somebody told a story, you know, kind of made it more of a narration, because people like to watch stories, you know, they watch all this silly stuff on TV, but they want to hear stories. If somebody told a story about how this has happened and why it's happened, and then wrap themselves into it, kind of like told my personal views on all this, and walked people through at a very first principles level how this got to be so broken. I mean, going all the way back to the founding of the Republic and why sound money is such an important thing. I mean, you know, it took us to the peak of the world. I mean, I think peak America was 1946, right? When we won World War II, the rest of the world was in ashes. We were, generally speaking, I think, a moral country. I mean, you know, as much as any country could be moral. And, you know, we had a good country. And since then we've slipped. I mean, 63 was the biggest one when they murdered Kennedy, but there were a lot of others after that. And I just walk through kind of the history of how we went down this wrong path and why it's really broken, with a goal to get this reader who doesn't know anything about finance to kind of feel like they understand enough to see, oh, I get it. I see how they've screwed me. And then of course the national says, well, that sucks. What do I do? And the answer is, you know, you buy Bitcoin. And so the second half of the book is walking them through all of the issues surrounding that. So really the goal is to orange pill, you know, 300 million Americans or 270 million, however many we've got in the country right now. And will I achieve the goal? I don't know. I mean, we'll see. I'm pretty sure Bitcoiners will like the book. That I can say that with confidence. But whether, you know, but that's really not my measure of success. My measure of success is, does this jump, it's like this book Crossing the Chasm, does this jump from just a hardcore Bitcoin maxi, you know, Austrian economics group, you know, all of whom talk the same language and know what's going on, you know, and have read Jeff's book and have read Lynn's book and have read Safe's book. Does this jump into, you know, your dental hygienist and the guy driving the cab and the guy driving the truck and the guy working in a factory? And does it jump into that group of other Americans who know they're getting screwed but don't understand the issue and want to fight back and want to fight for a better system, you know, and people on the liberal side who, you know, who understand that oligarchy is wrong and, you know, see the massive wealth inequality and they want to solve it through taxation, but that's not the right answer. The right answer is to have a fair system and then that will go away. So that was the purpose. And, you know, in a couple of weeks, I'm going to find out, you know, what the world thinks.
I'm sure the world's going to love it, Larry.
I don't know. I don't know. Every time I read, I'm like, oh God, this sucks. But
one of the most crooked industries, most fiat industries there is the health insurance industry. Let's be honest. You don't even need health insurance. If you could find somebody that would help you find awesome doctors, negotiate your bills, and fund those bills through a peer-to-peer funding platform, would you take it? That sounds pretty appealing to me, and that's why I've joined forces with CrowdHealth. CrowdHealth is a place that you could do that all in one. One giant place, you can have a group of peers where they will help you find the best healthcare that you need. On top of all that, I can help get you a discount to get you on your feet and get everything started. You can use promo code GREENCANDLE for 3 months at $99. And with all of this, you will get the healthcare you need. You don't have to worry about going through to the doctor, negotiating, everything like that. Did you hit your deductible? Did you not? Is this insurance company going to cover this claim? Is it not? You don't have to worry about any of that stress. And you could just get CrowdHealth behind you where they can help you get the number one place to have a health insurance alternative. But join the revolution. Go to joincrowdhealth.com. Tell them that Green Candle sent you. And join me and the rest of the great CrowdHealth users in this peer-to-peer funding platform. All right, enough for me. Let's get back to the show.
You know, look, it's honest. It's genuine. It's me. It's the best I could do in 6 months. You know, and some people who've read it obviously like it. So, but like I say, they're Bitcoiners. We got to see that. We got to see if we can, if it does what I hope it will do, it'll be a great orange pilling tool. It'll be the book you can give to your non-finance friend or, you know, or a TradFi person and say, hey, you know, you ought to consider the alternative case here. Here's a guy who was a TradFi guy who understands this and explains it. And maybe he's right. You know, that's what I'm hoping. That's the conversation that I hope occurs. And then I'm hoping that person who maybe even hates Bitcoin. I mean, I have gold people coming after me all the time hating Bitcoin. And I'm like, just open your eyes, you know, open your mind. Just, you know, maybe you're wrong. You know, I mean, the gold's not bad, but this is better. And so please consider it. And hopefully if they read this book, they might come away and go, you know what? He's got a point. Right? That's the idea.
Yeah, and I think that it will definitely orange pill some more people. So, you know, with that, you know, you said you had the motivation to, you know, pick it up. So, say somebody has a little flight, you know, and they can pick it up at the library or the, you know, the bookstore in the airport and kind of get orange pill and everything like that. Now, what out of some of the books that are missing outside of the textbookiness of some of the, you know, very popular ones, what is something else that you think is very unique about your book that you really tried to hammer home?
I tried to hammer home the corruption of the Federal Reserve, and I brought more of the politics into it. I shared all of my own personal kind of story, which I think makes it more interesting and human. And you can see my mistakes and my, you know, foibles and failures, which, and I think adds credibility to it. You know, I was very open about, you know, my past successes and failures. I've had some of both. Like I say, it's told more as a narrative. Like, it's told more as a how this happened, and it's got more of a libertarian political piece to it. And I offer a policy prescription. You know, I offer a, hey, this is what we want to do. I mean, if we want to fix this, we've got to get more politicians who understand that the core issue is the broken money. And, you know, we've got to vote for them. And then they've got to decide, you know what, we really should eliminate the Federal Reserve. Ron Paul was right. We do not need a Federal Reserve. You know, that should happen. And I think it will happen because I think they're going to fail. You know, they're in the process of failing in my, as I see it. But I think it brings, it integrates the politics a little bit more into the money, than maybe the other books have done. I should just say, I mean, huge, huge credit and hat tip to those other books. I mean, I could not have written this book without Safe, without Lynn, without Jeff. I mean, I've borrowed their material. I've restated it. What I've done is I've tried to get the best of, because, you know, I don't think your average American is going to sit down and plow through some of those books. I just don't. But I do think that they, you know, if they get the Reader's Digest version, which, and this isn't entirely Reader's Digest, it's a couple hundred pages, but if they get a more condensed version where they, you know, they can kind of, you know, read it quickly and get the gist of it, that's more likely to happen than them, you know, studying, you know, these other books. So that's kind of the slot that I'm trying to fit into.
Gotcha. Well, I want to finish up the interview with some fun questions about you, Larry, because you post a lot about CrossFit, but for those who haven't met you in person, I'm a little vertically challenged, but you seem like you got some height on you. So were you a basketball player growing up?
No, I should have been. You know, I should have been. I'm 6'3". Yeah. No, I wasn't. Actually probably as much as anything else, because in the wintertime, my father was a huge skier. He was on the ski patrol. And so he dragged me out to the ski slope all winter long. And so in basketball season was in the wintertime. So as a result of that, I never really played basketball, which is kind of ironic. But I like CrossFit. CrossFit to me is one of the more efficient ways of delaying the aging process, which is why I do it. And I'm not particularly good at it, but I'm very consistent at it. And that's, to me, that's the most important thing in any exercise routine. And I've mentioned this a lot. To anyone who's over 50, you've got to read the book Younger Next Year by Chris Crowley, or Crowley. I'm not sure what his first name is, but anyway, the aging process from 50 to 90 is going to take a very different slope if you can get into a serious exercise routine versus just being sedentary. And I want to be having fun in my 70s, 80s, 90s, and so. As a result, I commit, you know, an hour a day to fitness, and I this is a person who was very overweight, out of shape, etc. in my early 50s when I found this and changed. And I highly recommend, as people age, that they do something like this, because I'm 67 and I feel better than when I was in my 30s and 40s in terms of, you know, sleep, energy, strength, all that stuff. It's great. I mean, it's truly proof of work. If you do the work, you will feel good. So all you got to do is walk through the door, and don't get me wrong. There are a lot of days I don't want to walk through the door. I'm like, oh shit, but I just do. And I do what I can do. Some days are pretty good days where I feel really fired up and I kill it. And other days are pretty shitty days. I just go through the motions. But if I walk through the door, you know, then I'm moving ahead. So.
Wow, Larry, I'm not going to lie to you. If you told me you were 67 before this call, I would have told you you're absolutely crazy, because you look great for, you've been doing. So, and especially with all the energy you bring, I thought you would have been like, you know, in the 50s area, just because you come in and you bring the heat always. So what's another routine?
I'm not sure that's a good thing. My wife says it. I've tried to structure the F-bombs out of my conversations, and, you know, it's not always a good thing, right?
Hey, well, maybe you should bring them back, Larry.
No,
I think people love it, man.
No. You know, sometimes in small private settings, absolutely, I'll let go. But then I've discovered sometimes people are taping me and they'll put them up on the web or on Twitter, and I'm like, oh, shit.
Yeah. So. Well, what's another routine that you've gotten into later in life that you think has been
The other one I would say is alcohol is a shit coin, and I figured that out in my 30s. And so I've been dry since that time, and mid 30s. And I would highly recommend that. I just think that there's just nothing good about drinking. And You know, and I don't begrudge anyone who wants to drink. I mean, some people do and drink moderately, they control it and enjoy it. That's fine. And happy, you know, good for them. But, in my particular case, it didn't work for me. And, you know, I, anyone who's on the path of thinking about quitting, I'm a big supporter of that. I know a lot of people who have, you know, and there are a lot of us that are in this camp. I mean, you know, Max is dry and a lot of people I know who are dry, and I think it's a great way to live, but that's just me.
Yeah, that's awesome stuff. So you're an inspiration to us all, Larry. I really appreciate
you're being kind. I'm just I'm an old squirrel looking for a nut.
Well, you're very kind and you do a lot of great things for the Bitcoin space. We all greatly appreciate it. So why don't you tell us where they can find the book when it comes out, when you're planning on dropping it, and where they can figure out more about you.
Yeah. So, well, I'm on Twitter. Everyone knows that's just my name, at Lawrence Lepard. I've got a website, EMA2. I've got a partner, David Foley. He runs the Bitcoin Opportunity Fund, which is a fund that focuses on Bitcoin and Bitcoin companies, doing really well. At a big position in MicroStrategy. They're raising money right now. If anyone's interested, they should reach out about that. And then the book itself will be out. I put it on, it's on Twitter. You can buy the Kindle version. The announced date on Kindle is February 14th. I hope to really beat that date. I'm in layout right now. I would say I'm probably halfway through layout. It could end, I'm guessing right. If I had to guess right now, I bet the book will drop in that first week of February. And I hope even sooner, but I just don't know. I got to get the layout right. I don't want it to look, you know, some of the charts aren't right. I don't want them to look shitty. So I'm working on that right now. But it'll definitely be here in February, early February.
Awesome. Well, this interview will be coming out right before that. So everybody will be highly anticipating that. So Larry, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Brandon. Always enjoy talking to you, and hope to see you again soon at one of the shows.
Yeah, 100%. So I'll definitely put all that in the show notes and I'll be pumping it. So everybody that's following Larry and myself, you'll know when that book drops. And I'll be one of the first people to try to get my hands on it as well. So Larry, thanks so much, man.
Thanks, Brandon. Take care.
Thank you for tuning in to the latest episode of the State of Bitcoin podcast. If you really enjoyed this one, I've got another one cooking up for you. You can click that right here and you can go to the next episode, which is an absolute banger, where you know I'm bringing you only the latest and greatest guests. Or if you're looking for more macro-related content, you could check out my other channel, Macro Insights Pod. I got it linked for you right here. So where I'm bringing you more about stocks, real estate, traditional finance stuff. So go ahead and check that out. And if you enjoyed this podcast, go ahead and hit that like, hit that subscribe button, and tell a friend to tell a friend. All right, enough from me. I'll see you at the next one.